Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. Last month, an NPR investigation revealed that some survivors of secret World War II Pentagon studies exposing enlisted men to mustard gas are still waiting for compensation for their injuries. On this episode of That's History, let's look at the legacy of government secrets and the conspiracy theories they spawn with Jonathan Zimmerman, historian at New York University. Hello, Jonathan.
Good to be here as always.
Jonathan, WHYY listeners learned that veterans now in their 80s and 90s who were more or less coerced into participating sustained chronic injuries and to this day are coming up against VA red tape. Jonathan, there's a long legacy of governmental subterfuge and obfuscation. Little wonder it breeds skepticism, suspicion, cynicism, even survivalist groups.
Yes, and conspiracy theories. I think we've got a very rich recent one in the Jade Helm military exercise in Texas.
Tell me more.
Well, Jade Helm is a bad name from, I think, a bad science fiction movie, and I don't know who came up with it, but it's a Department of Defense mock invasion in seven states. It shouldn't surprise you that since the military's job in part is to fight wars, that throughout its history, it has simulated wars. That's a way to train people and prepare them for it, and that's what Jade Helm is. But when news of this exercise came out, and let's emphasize it is an exercise, a simulation. When news of it came out, the internet lit up with people saying that it was an actual invasion. And in Texas, which is one of the states that is going to be mock invaded, elected representatives made statements indicating that they were concerned about the federal government making incursions on people's rights, suspending habeas corpus. Indeed, the governor of Texas, Greg Abbott, said that he was going to put the state National Guard on guard just to make sure that these federal military officers who say that they're engaging in a mock exercise are in fact just pretending.
Sometimes there's a nugget of truth that spawns these theories. In this case, it seems to be completely devoid of fact.
Well, it is devoid of fact, yet I think as historians, we have to ask ourselves why it resonates for people. Let's be clear, in no way am I attaching any credence to this conspiracy theory, but my job as a historian is to try to understand why people might believe it. And I think to do that, you do have to go backwards in time, and you have to see that, in fact, although the government, we have no evidence of the government engaging in a conspiracy in Jade Helm, the government has engaged in multiple conspiracies across the 20th century.
Perhaps the most notorious is that executed by the U.S. Public Health Service from 1932 until 72.
That's right. Four decades, the so-called Tuskegee experiment, in which the Public Health Service denied potentially life-saving treatments to African Americans who had been infected with venereal diseases in order to, quote, test the way the disease worked. There are many other examples after that. If we're talking about the early 70s, of course, we have to talk about Watergate, which was itself a conspiracy that was engineered at the very top levels of the U.S. government, indeed with the knowledge of the president, to wiretap the president's opponents, and indeed a psychiatrist, Daniel Ellsberg, who had been a critic of the president. When the Frank Church report came out in the mid-70s, we found out that the CIA had engaged in all kinds of conspiratorial and illegal efforts to assassinate foreign leaders, including Fidel Castro. So you look at this history, and it goes on and on and on into the Iran-Contra conspiracy. And you can understand, as the journalist Rod McLeish said in the 1970s, if the government doesn't want people believing in conspiracy theories, it should stop conspiring against people.
But it's a circular argument. If people have the ability to have conspiracy theories and they indeed are elected to government positions, then you have people in government who can launch conspiracy theories.
And we should add, in addition to at different moments conspiring against people, the government has also launched its own conspiracy theories. So the most famous one involves Joseph McCarthy, who in 1950 went to Wheeling, West Virginia, held up a piece of paper and said, I have in my hand 205 card-carrying communists who work in the federal government. Later, of course, he reduced that number to 57. Then he raised it again. But the idea was there is a conspiracy inside the government, and that accounts for the Yalta Peace Accord. That accounts for the Soviets getting the hydrogen bomb. on and on.
Plain and simple, fear-mongering.
Exactly. And to go back to Nixon, one of the things Nixon did, in addition to engineering the Watergate conspiracy, is he also floated false conspiracy theories about his predecessors. So, for example, he or his operatives faked a cable, created a fake telegram, trying to show that John F. Kennedy, one of the predecessor presidents, had actually had a hand in assassinating Ngo Diem, the former leader of South Vietnam.
There's a lot of historical precedent for this, as you're citing, and now fast forward to 2015, and with polling, we see that dysfunctional government is at the top or near the top of Americans' concerns right now. It makes this all the more powerful.
It does, but it also, I think, points to a fascinating paradox, because you poll Americans and you see that they do believe the government is inept and the government is dysfunctional. They have a huge amount of distrust for it, but they're also willing to believe that this incredibly inept, dysfunctional entity can somehow pull off a massive conspiracy without anybody knowing.
How do you suspect that social media and the internet fan those flames?
I think they don't account for it, but they exacerbate it. Obviously, it's a lot easier for people to share these theories with the internet. The theories predate the internet, but the internet accelerated them. So, you know, to take some recent examples, you find that a third of Americans believe that George W. Bush and his administration either knew about or had a hand in the World Trade Center attacks. But it is remarkable that the same group of people, i.e. Americans, who in one breath believe that the government is too inept to fix roads or to fix schools, will nevertheless believe that it could carry out this incredibly complex and secret operation with perfect efficiency.
I believe psychologists refer to that as cognitive dissonance. Is there a cure in sight, or do you see it spiraling out of control?
Well, look, I mean, I think that although it's a cliche, the most obvious cure is what Louis Brandeis called sunlight, sunlight being the best disinfectant. So transparency and honesty in government. To go back to 9/11, let's also remember that our government itself had a hand, I believe, in promoting certain conspiracy theories, specifically the idea that Saddam Hussein was connected to the World Trade Center attacks. Vice President Cheney said this several days after the attacks, and we now know that he himself had received information suggesting that it was untrue and that Mohammed Atta had not been in Prague meeting with an Iraqi operative, like Cheney said.
Let alone the pretext whereby Colin Powell presented in front of the United Nations, that turned out to be specious as well.
Indeed. So, you know, I think the cure is for maximal transparency, accountability, honesty on the part of our government leaders. Like McLeish said, if the government doesn't want people believing harebrained and often hateful conspiracies about our leaders, it should stop hatching them.
Jonathan, thanks for joining us once again on NewsWorks Tonight.
Thanks. It was good to talk.
Jonathan Zimmerman is a historian at New York University.